So you know it is a violation of every homiletic norm, of every rule of speaking, to start with something that has nothing to do with what you're going to talk about. But I can't resist this. And those of you who know the people on the Bema will appreciate it. As we were sitting here a little while ago, Dr. Paul Herman, who is sitting behind me, said, if this were a law firm, it would be Lerman, Herman, Berman, and Sherman. How good is that? Okay, now we can move on. I just couldn't resist. So I want to talk about the great theoretician of capitalism this morning, at least to start. What Marx was to Marxism, Adam Smith was and is to capitalism. And to most people, if you talk about Adam Smith, they'll say that he's the one who came up with the idea of the invisible hand of the free market and so on, and his books are still read by economists and political theorists. But what many people don't realize about Smith is that this Scottish thinker also was a moralist. And he wrote a book called The Theory of Moral Sentiments, which was about the moral life of human beings, which involved economics, but was primarily about morality. And he made an observation that I want to start with this morning to lead into a discussion of the Akedah, of the Binding of Isaac. Smith said, if you read in the paper tomorrow morning that there was a terrible earthquake and a million people died in China, you would feel bad. You would worry about the implications globally. But you know what? You'd still eat lunch. He said, but if someone cut off your little finger, that's all you could think about all day long. You wouldn't be able to eat. You wouldn't be able to sleep. It would dominate your thoughts. He said, and that might make you think that human beings are only selfish, but if someone said to you, you can save a million lives by losing your little finger, you would do it. Why is that? And he said, it's the difference between what you feel and what affects you physically and reasoning and thinking about morality, which is not the same as the way you feel. That sometimes we feel something, but when we think about it, when we give it time and reflection and argument and so on, we come to a different conclusion. So even though losing a finger might feel much worse than you would feel if you knew something terrible would happen, you would willingly undergo it to save a million lives. That idea that sometimes the way you think and the way you feel are at odds from one another is exactly the reason that we argue about things. If it wasn't about that, you could just say, I feel this, and that would be the end of it. But we recognize what Smith said in that very vivid example, which is sometimes our arguments lead us to different places than our first impressions or than our feelings. And that must mean that there is something valuable about the arguing itself, about the thinking through itself. That a life lived solely by how you feel is not really going to be the life that you want to live. And the life that you would live if you gave it reflection. So now let's turn to the Akedah, the Binding of Isaac. If you remember, God says to Abraham, take your son up to the mountain for a sacrifice. Abraham does it. He takes him up to the mountain. At the last moment, an angel tells him to stop and not to do it. And he sacrifices a lamb, a ram instead. Now, this story has been subject to endless commentary. I don't think anything so short has ever generated so much literature. There are entire books written just about the Akedah, about the 20 verses of God telling Abraham to do this. A very famous book of Christian theology, Fear and Trembling, was written by Kierkegaard, based entirely on the Akedah, in which he says that it is a teleological suspension of the ethical. In other words, God says, ethics don't matter anymore, you just have to do what I say. By the way, Jewish commentary has argued with Kierkegaard that the ethical never gets suspended, that ethics always matter, that you always have to think about the... And this is the reason why Abraham did it, because he understood that God is the author of ethics. Or that Abraham was testing God to see whether God really wanted him to do it. Or that God was trying to teach Abraham that even though he lived in a world of human sacrifice is bad, and that's why he stops it at the last moment. Or that the ultimate ethical principle is obedience to God, and therefore Abraham was doing what was right, since after all God made the entire world and gets to decide who lives in it and who doesn't. Whichever one of these views you take, or if you take none of these views, if you say it was just a terrible thing and shouldn't have been done, and that also, by the way, has found voices in Jewish commentary, what is valuable in part about the Akedah is that it is a generator of endless argument. Any story that can be interpreted and you're done with has nothing more to give us. But I assure you, if I went around the room this morning and talked about the Akedah, I would get 50 different views, 100 different views. And that's part of what makes the artistry of the story is great art is art that can be endlessly argued. Mediocre art, you give it an interpretation or two and you're done. I bring this up not only because of the Akedah, but because you realize that this is the foundation of our society. Why is it that when you go to court, you don't just have two people who appeal to a judge and get a decision? Why do you have to have advocates on each side? It's because deep in the American fabric, as deep in the Jewish fabric, there is a belief in the clarifying power of arguing. Sometimes you will hear people unreflectively say it's terrible that they're arguing all the time. I just wish politicians would all get along. But in fact, the system is set up so that we argue. I don't care who you voted for in the election, you should be glad that the other side argues with you, because it will make your views clearer, better, surer, more nuanced, all the things that the Jewish tradition teaches when it has in the Talmud what's called shakla vitaria, which means give and take. Abraham Tversky, who is a Hasidic rabbi and a psychiatrist, tells a wonderful story about being in the yeshiva, and he came up with what he thought was a great point. And he said that his Talmud teacher, whom he loved, said, "You're right. You're right. You're 100% right. Now, let me tell you why you're wrong." He said, and that was a characteristic of the Beit Midrash, of the House of Study. That idea that the Torah is supposed to be a generator of argument, even though that's not generally what we teach our kids. We don't say study Torah so that you can argue. That's exactly what the Jewish tradition has done for thousands of years. If you open a classical page of the Chumash, you know what you have around it? Around it you have commentary. The same thing with the Talmud. And the commentaries can be guaranteed to be arguing with each other. If they weren't, you'd have one commentary. When you open an English Bible, you just see English print. When you open a Chumash, a Hebrew Bible, it's always Chumash and Rashi. It's always the text and commentary. And then you have what's called Mikrot Gedolot, which literally means great reading, but it really means the Bible with lots and lots and lots of commentaries, because there are people who disagree with Rashi, primarily, by the way, especially in the Talmud, his own grandchildren, the Tosafot, who spend their time arguing with their grandfather, paying him deference, but arguing with him, because that's the tradition. So part of what I want to say about the Akedah this morning is not just that it illustrates the power of storytelling, but that it reinforces the necessity of argument. And when you go back and watch Fox MSNBC, and you hear people screaming at each other and dismissing each other, realize that there's something valuable and essential in that experience. That having different outlets expressing different things, including, by the way, the thing that you would never agree with, is crucial to a democracy. A place where there is no argument is called a totalitarian society. In North Korea, nobody argues. In places, unfortunately, in the Middle East, nobody argues. In Israel, everyone does. But that's a good thing. And you want to know how deep it is in the Jewish tradition? I'll tell you how deep. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were two of the greatest of the Talmudic rabbis. In fact, Reish Lakish was married to Rabbi Yochanan's sister. But they disagreed about everything. And they had a terrible falling out, and Reish Lakish died. And after he died, Rabbi Yochanan was inconsolable since he had fallen out with his study partner. So they thought, what could they do? They need to bring someone for Rabbi Yochanan to study with. So they did. And Rabbi Yochanan had this new study partner, and he offered an opinion, and the man said to him, "You're right, that is a great teaching." And Rabbi Yochanan said, "You're useless to me." He said, "When I would say anything, Reish Lakish would offer 50 objections to why everything I said was completely wrong. What do I need you for to tell me I'm right?" So please, other than the sermon, argue with everything. And don't think that the fact that you argue, or your children argue with you, or you argue with each other, or that there are public arguments, is necessarily a bad thing. It really is the way in which we listen to what is weak in our own position and what is strong in someone else's. Remember the example of Rabbi Yochanan, that moral reasoning and thinking about the world sometimes comes from being forced to listen to the argument that you dismiss, that you don't like, in public life, in private life. One can imagine that the Akedah is put there to generate endless disagreement and endless argument. That is a beautiful and a wonderful thing. Ultimately, you know, when Jews talk about the Messiah, do you know what it says in the Talmud? When they can't disagree, when they can't reach a conclusion about an issue, they say teku, which in modern Hebrew means a draw or a stalemate in chess, but in the Talmud it means tishbi, itaretz, kushyot, ubayot, which means when the Messiah comes, he'll tell us what the solution is. But until the Messiah comes, keep arguing. Shabbat shalom.